This is Sony artisan Patrick Murphy Racy, and you're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sharky James. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, episode 99. Nikon takes a little and gives a little with the D3400. Very little. In this episode, Nikon loses its mind again, Canon files a slightly different patent, certain photographers in Canada are cheating, a photographer's gear gets blown up, another's gets splattered, Data Color has a great bundle, and our friend Doug Kay has a deal for our audience. All that and more in episode 99 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much, Patrick, for opening the show. I greatly appreciate it, brother. Tennessee-based Patrick Murphy Racy is a Sony artisan of imagery, has photographed many notable people, has had the cover of Sports Illustrated. He's a lighting expert and a great guy. I first met PMR, as many of us call him, well over 20 years ago. A mutual friend of ours told me about a service that he had called PhotoFax, a service that many pros back then in the pre-internet days used to sell their gear. Rather than listing your high-end gear in a local newspaper where most people are probably like, what's that? He was the middleman between you and others. Patrick Murphy Racy saw a need back then and met it well before Amazon, eBay, and other ways that you might pick up your gear today. He's a master at identifying a problem and solving it, and that goes for photography as well. Follow his blog, follow him everywhere he is online, and you will pick up tidbits of info that solve problems for you, and you're going to be amazed just how much you're going to learn from his experience, and things will start clicking into place and really take your photography to the next level. Like I said, PMR is a great photographer, an amazing problem solver, and the info that you're going to pick up from him will be invaluable. I want you all to check him out at pmrphoto.com and his blog specifically at pmrphoto.blogspot.com. For me, it's essential reading. I don't miss anything that he posts because I'm always going to learn something from Patrick Murphy Racy. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in episode 99 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast, our very last podcast before we hit triple digits. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you all for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. And as always, we appreciate hitting that subscribe button, which is very important to podcasts, and telling your friends on social media and elsewhere, and helping to get the word out about this show. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. If you're in the market for an entry-level crop sensor DSLR in the Nikon system, you may or may not be interested in their new D3400. This new body, well, kind of new body, has a 24.2 megapixel sensor. And if you're thinking that sounds awfully familiar, yes, the D3300 was also 24.2 megapixels. In fact, it's the very same sensor. Likewise, it features the very same X-Speed 4 processor that was in the D3300. That's frustrating, isn't it? It's also very confusing to consumers, at least those that follow these things. You would expect even a little bit of a bump in resolution, right? Nope. Now, this camera shoots at 5 frames per second in continuous mode, so that's actually not too bad. And there's 11 autofocus points, which, you know, kind of seems rather weak. But remember, this isn't the camera that you're buying to shoot sports. This is likely destined for vacations, little Johnny's birthday parties, family gatherings, Susie heading off to college, etc. But still, a little more than 11 autofocus points for this class of camera would be really helpful, right? It has a 3-inch fixed position LCD on the back, and no, there's no touchscreen functionality. You know, here in 2016, we've had touchscreens on our smartphones for many years now. At this point, it's getting pretty darn silly that a camera ships without the ability to use that LCD, not only to change settings, but to change focus, etc. So that's a huge fail in my mind. Come on, Nikon, this is what I'm talking about. It's starting to look like you actually don't want to sell cameras. And you kind of need to, and quick. Now for the D3400's ISO range, it'll go from ISO 100 to 25,600. But you know what? Anything past 6,400 is going to be pretty darn dodgy. Dodgy. Our UK listeners are going to be really impressed that I even know the term dodgy. You're welcome. The D3300 only went up to ISO 12,800, so that's a one-stop difference, and that's going to be appreciated. However, if everything else is the same here, what exactly did they do to get to 25,600? You got to figure that noise is not going to be that very well handled that high. They just jacked everything up, I'm thinking. Now, on the video front, the D3400 will shoot full HD, also known as 1080p, at 60 frames per second, and it can shoot that for a full 20 minutes on the highest quality setting, or a tad under 30 minutes on a lower quality setting. This camera has low energy, always on Bluetooth in it for easy pairing with your smartphone, tablet, etc., with Nikon SnapBridge technology, so that's nice, I guess, for the massive amount of people that want to transfer their pictures to their phones. There's a guide mode in this camera since the body is squarely aimed at beginning photographers. But of course, there's a lot of great information online these days. Which reminds me, a while back over my personal website, I created an entire section which runs you through all the basics and a lot more. If you want to check that out, it's at lensshark.com/start. I think a lot of people are going to find that useful. Definitely check that out sometime. You know, these cameras are already pretty darn light, and amazingly, the D3400 is lighter than the D3300, which according to The Verge was 30% smaller and 25% lighter than the D3200. You know, what's really weird here is that Nikon went from the D5300 straight to the D5500, but here they've gone from the D3300 to the D3400. I think they know that this isn't much of an upgrade at all. Then again, it's Nikon. You know, they're great at making goofy decisions, but they're also great at making great cameras. And like my D500, which I'm really enjoying, this is going to be a decent camera for people. Nikon also announced four new lenses. Two are 18 to 55mm kit lenses. One has VR, while the other one doesn't. And both of them have the P designation, which signifies that it has a stepping motor inside. You know, Nikon realizes that people are increasingly using DSLRs for video, and they don't appreciate the noise that autofocus lenses make. And the stepping motor is going to help take care of that. If you have the D3300, I don't think you're going to be very interested in the D3400. Most people won't be, at least. You'd probably want to make the jump to the D7200 if you're looking for a camera that's going to give you a whole lot more. Because all you're really getting with the D3400 is slightly better ISO performance and Bluetooth built in it. And Nikon says that the battery is going to last nearly twice as long. That's really nice, but you know what? These aren't really great upgrades. Nikon, frankly, should be embarrassed about this camera. This is the most minor of updates to the previous model. It's basically a slightly updated D3300 rebadged as the D3400. But if you're in the market for a starter camera and you don't have one already, the D3400 would be a nice camera to have, I guess. There's really nothing wrong with it. The real problem is that Nikon has decided to make insignificant changes and call it good. Not only call it good, but call it a new camera. Well, in my opinion, that is just wrong. Oh, and they also took some things away that the D3300 had. Yeah, took things away. So they didn't just add to the D3300, and mind you, the things they added weren't very great. They actually took things away. Gone is the external mic port. So if you do want to do video on the cheap with this camera and have better audio, you're out of luck. I mean, why would they do that? That makes no sense. That, of course, you know, saves them money. But this camera is about the cost of what the last one was, right? Also, the ultrasonic sensor cleaning is gone too. I mean, can you believe that? So you either have to get really good at cleaning your own sensor or send the body into Nikon to have that done. When have you ever heard of a camera company taking things away like this? Sensor cleaning. I mean, it's been in these cameras for years now, but it's gone. Amazing. So they've dumbed down the D3300, prettied it up a little bit with some other stuff, and call it the D3400. That is just bizarre to me. I mean, what the heck is going on over at Nikon? Seriously. In addition to the 18 to 55mm lenses, they also announced a pair of 70 to 300mm lenses with and without VR, and those start at $349.95. I think that's pretty reasonable. Now, the Nikon D3400 is available in both black as well as red in a kit with just the 18 to 55mm for $649.95, $50 cheaper for the version without VR. And if you'd like both the 18 to 55 and the 70 to 300, that'll run $995.95. And these are all going to be available sometime next month in early September 2016, if anyone's interested in these. Next. Before we get further into the show, I want to give a quick mention about something that our friend Doug Kay, host of one of my favorite shows, and probably one of your favorite shows too, All About the Gear on the TWIP Network has. And like you, he's also a listener of the show. Doug has been traveling down to Cuba, leading amazing workshops for a while now. And since the travel embargo is lifted, there's a limited time to see and photograph Cuba before it gets all commercial and changes forever. Basically, the Cuba that you've been seeing on TV for many years is not going to stay like that for very much longer. If you want to experience old Havana, or Havana if you're a gringo, and its people the way they've lived for many decades now, and do so as inexpensively as possible, Doug's workshop is how to do it. And no, this is not an ad. I just want to make sure you guys know about this before things completely change out there. Doug only allows 10 participants or so per workshop, and I believe that is pretty darn awesome. He's got one of the best workshops down there. As I learned from him recently, the hotels down there in Cuba are getting crazy expensive since the embargo was lifted, and people are going down there to visit, of course, so it's raising prices. But Doug has great contacts. I mean, he's Doug K for Pete's sake. And if I had the time, I'd be down there taking one of his workshops as well. I talked to Doug a little bit earlier today, and he has a few spots open for his workshops coming up in January and March of 2017. And I didn't have to twist his arm too hard to get him to offer my listeners, his fellow listeners of this podcast, $100 US off his workshops. Doug's a great guy, as you can see. I suspect that the few spots that he has open will fill up quickly, so if you've been dying to do a workshop down there in Cuba before it gets super touristy, check out all the info that he has set up over at dougkay.com/workshops, and K is spelled K-A-Y-E, of course. Somewhere over there, you can enter the code Sharky, that's S-H-A-R-K-Y, and save $100 off an already reasonable photo workshop in Cuba. It's probably the least expensive one that's out there, and it's with Doug K. Doug K, I mean, come on. For the cynical, again, this was not an ad. Just trying to hook you guys up because you've been so good to me and this show. I mean, our next episode is episode 100. I mean, that's awesome, right? And hey, if you're not interested in going to Cuba for his workshop, at least head on over to Doug's website at that URL I just gave you and see his photos from his past workshops. They are awesome. Doug knows his stuff. Again, Doug K. Do I need to say any more? Siguiente. That's Spanish for next. Next. In May 2016, I told you about Canon filing a patent for a 28 to 560 millimeter f/2.8 to 5.6 L USM insane super zoom lens. One that seems, or seemed at the time, to be unlikely to be made. And yet, Agami has found a new patent for that lens, but this one doesn't have image stabilization in it. Isn't that peculiar? I mean, ask yourself something here. Why would Canon bother patenting yet another version of this lens? A lens with such an incredible range that no one really believes that it's ever going to be a thing. But you also might recall that Canon patented an even crazier 40 to 800 millimeter f4 to 5.6 super zoom. So what's up with all these patents? You know, there's a couple of theories in play here. The first being that one or more of them are somehow actually going to be made. I mean, it's possible. They seem like they'd be extremely large, extremely heavy, and extremely expensive, but they might actually go into production. You never know. The other theory, and the one that most people actually believe, is that they're smoke screens meant to throw off competitors like Nikon. And that's not at all a crazy theory, because it happens all the time. Now, our friends over at Canon Rumors note that Canon is reportedly working on a replacement for their EF 28 to 300mm f3.5 to 5.6 LIS, a real lens, something you can actually buy. So while that's not quite a 28 to 560, it's conceivable that what we might see might be something in between the two, perhaps a 28 to 400mm, and that would be really cool. Now, if they make the aperture improve as well, as indicated by the now two patents, that would be amazing. So time is going to tell here. I don't know what's going on with Canon, but they seem to have something in the works here. And we might see that at Photokina next month. I don't know. Time's going to tell. Next. Okay. Never, ever, ever leave your camera bag somewhere unattended, especially in a big city. No, not just because someone will walk off with it, which is, you know, a real possibility, but because the bomb squad is likely to blow it up. And that's exactly what happened recently in Kansas City, Missouri. According to the Kansas City Star, a great paper, by the way, a security guard at City Hall there noticed the black case at about 3:40 a.m. Monday, August 15th, 2016. Police were called. No one wanted to touch it, of course, and the bomb and arson unit was called. At about 6:30 a.m., they used explosives to detonate the case, and some poor photographer's gear went flying everywhere. What the police thought may be a bomb was really a tripod, a camera, and a few other items. Now, there's no word yet on whose gear it was, as they haven't come forward, nor exactly what kind of gear it was. If it was expensive stuff and he or she was insured, then of course they're going to come forward. But if it was a cheapo tripod, camera, etc., you might as well just let it be. I mean, why get involved at that point? That might be pretty darn embarrassing. Next. As photographers, it's important to maintain situational awareness to the extent that you can, of course. Not just so you don't fall off a wall like our friend David Duschman did 5 years ago, but also because if you're shooting in a situation where your camera might get damaged, you might want to mitigate to the extent that you can. That is, try to significantly reduce the chances of getting your gear covered in fire retardant by planes that are fighting fires above you. Now, when I was a photojournalist and shooting wildfires, you bet your backside I wasn't anywhere near the path of those planes. Heck no. And that's what photographer Brian Manili found out this past June when his camera and lens got splattered by pink fire retardant. He kept shooting, of course, but that's not exactly what you want on your gear. Water is bad enough, but fire retardant is going to take extra care and cleaning, and it's not going to be pretty. I mean, unless you think pink is pretty, and then you leave it on your camera and lens. So there's that. And who knows what that does long term to your gear, right? It can't possibly be good. I mean, this stuff is meant to put down fires. Of the incident, the experienced photojournalist says, quote, "There was a wildfire that got extremely close to my house. Our neighbor was evacuated, so we prepared to do the same. But after packing a bag, I grabbed my Pentax K5 2S and went onto the roof to get some photos of the planes dropping the fire retardant on the blaze," end quote. So he went up on his roof to get a better position from which to shoot when one of the CAL FIRE planes changed direction and began dropping its payload on the nearby fire, then flying toward his home. He got off the roof and took cover, but that's when his gear caught some of it as it fell over him. Now, being a PJ, he decided that there were still photos to be made, of course, which, you know, I would have done as well. And he, quote, "wiped off the lens, sprayed myself off with a hose, and kept shooting," end quote. Over a month has passed since this incident, and his Pentax K5 2S is still bespeckled in the pink fire retardant. Its resale value is shot, but it works just fine, apparently. Now, personally, I'd get my shots, then shield my gear with my body. The photos are nice, but they're not going to win you a Pulitzer Prize, and selling them for a lot of money isn't exactly going to be happening. So all you've done, really, is got some nice photos and seriously devalued your gear forever. So is it worth it? To me, it's not. Next. In Canada, if you're a wildlife photographer and you want to use a special type of radio receiver to locate animals who are collared, well, you're making things difficult for your fellow photographers. Like Mom said, this is why we can't have nice things. Parks Canada has made it illegal for visitors to three parks in Alberta and British Columbia to possess and use receivers which would help photographers find animals to photograph who have collars placed on them so they can be located by conservationists who are studying those animals. In other words, these are important animals, and photographers are using technology to hunt them down. I guess the upside to this, though, is that they're just shooting photos. Now, personally, photographing wild animals wearing tracking collars doesn't at all seem very desirable visually. I mean, I know there's probably other animals around them, but still. And not only that, it's kind of cheating, right? I mean, it's smart, but you're really depriving yourself of part of the fun of wildlife photography, and that is finding the animals to photograph like everyone else. Of the use of these VHF telemetry devices, Bill Hunt, resource conservation manager for the Banff Field Unit, told the CBC, quote, "We've had a few incidents where we've suspected that people, presumably after photos, have been using scanners within their vehicles to locate wildlife. We just wanted to put this in place to make sure that people understand that that's considered harassing wildlife and is no longer lawful in those parks," end quote. The parks they're referring to include Banff, Kootenay, and Yoho National Parks. Who's naming these things, by the way? That was very difficult for me to say. So immediately, if you're found to even be bringing one of these telemetry devices into those parks, you can be found in violation of the National Parks Act, and be fined up to $25,000. Now, it's been noted that in the past, it was difficult to charge a photographer with harassing wildlife because you'd have to actually show that they were actually being harassed. But now, under this new rule, all they have to do is find you in possession of one of those devices. That's it. You don't even have to be using it. You just have to be bringing it in to the park. You know, at some point, someone had a brilliant yet incredibly stupid idea to use technology to find these animals. And that's just not wildlife photography. It's just not. Admittedly, this is not the same, but it's like those canned shoots where people who think they're hunters go on a plot of land where they're guaranteed to find and shoot those animals. You know, you're stacking the deck severely in your favor there. Thankfully, though, with these so-called wildlife photographers, the animals don't get hurt. Or do they? I mean, there's a reason why Parks Canada has made this activity illegal. And it's because these animals are being studied and need not to be tracked down wherever they go with no escape. Think about it for a second. You go out to one of these parks with your camera, you see a wolf, and you photograph it. And then the wolf takes off and you lose it. The wolf gets away and his stress level goes way down. I mean, it doesn't know what you're up to, right? But if you're using a device with which you can always find them because they have a tracking collar on them, they literally can't escape you. I mean, you'll always be able to find them. So wherever they go, there you are. That's stressful. And for animals who are being studied, that's not a good thing. So you can see why they would put this in place, huh? And it's just my opinion, well, and the opinion of a lot of people, that this just isn't wildlife photography, not in the spirit of wildlife photography. It's called stalking, actually. If you're going to do that, maybe photography is just not for you. Next. Do you calibrate your monitor? Yeah, me neither. Not for a while, at least. And most don't. Unless you're making prints, and especially if you're selling prints, you can probably skip it. Especially with monitors these days. They're amazing. But if you want to get serious about your color, having a look at the Spider 5 Capture Pro might be a good way to go. Datacolor has announced the new calibration bundle that's aimed at pro photographers, as well as those who want to get the most out of their printing and need an end-to-end solution. In the bundle, you get the Spider Lens Cal, Spider Checker, Spider Cube, and Spider 5 Elite. Now, Spider Lens Cal calibrates the autofocus of your camera and lenses, features an integrated level and tripod mount for convenience, and along with your camera's autofocus micro-adjustment, it'll help you make sure that your gear isn't the issue. So after you got your gear tuned up and you're sure it's good to go, Spider Checker and Spider Cube can be placed in your shots for calibration references for contrast, white balance, and color when it comes time to do your post-processing. Using Spider Checker, for instance, allows you to create a custom profile for that particular scene where the lighting and conditions are not changing, and using that profile to adjust your photos on import or together should they already be imported. With Spider Cube, you can easily set your white balance, exposure, and black levels. It's an odd-looking item, and the moment you see it, you're going to understand exactly why they designed it the way it is. Rounding this all out is the item you think of when you think about calibration, and that's the device that hangs off the front of your monitor and attaches to it. In this case, that's the Spider 5 Elite, a color calibrator that makes sure your monitor conforms to a color standard, and that's very important once it comes time to make prints, of course. That is, if you want them to match what's on your screen. If you like surprises, then a calibrator is just going to spoil your fun. Is your client's wedding dress gray, or was it actually white? Yeah, you get the idea here. So if these products solve some problems for you, this bundle is going to, well, save you a bundle. Dad jokes are fun. What can I say? Let's move on. Purchased separately, these would cost you $541 US, but this new Spider 5 Capture Pro bundle can be had for about 30% off. That's $370. But that's after September 2016, though. Until then, and you're going to love this, this bundle can be had for $100 cheaper. Yep, just $270. Half of what it would cost you if you bought everything separately. Now, that is an insane deal. And if you are making prints for clients and you're not entirely happy with how they're coming out, this might be something you want to get on. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 99 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head on over there, you can leave us a voicemail question that we can answer here on the show. And if you're one of those people and you're uncomfortable leaving a voicemail, feel free to email me at lensshark@gmail.com. That'll work as well. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, and I hope you do, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook where I'm Lens Shark. That's LENSSHARK. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 100, our milestone episode. You definitely don't want to miss that one. Well, it's f8 and 250th of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.
In this case, that's a spider. That's not a spider. That's a very large airplane. I mean, listen to that. I wonder where they're going. Probably somewhere, ironically, where it's a lot quieter. Maybe they're listening to the show. I wonder.